Welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. He's the Hall of Famer. His name is Chris Carter. He goes by Nick Wright, and for the first time in a long time, we are all in the same place at the same time.
All right, let me check you out, Jenna. Let me just see. You got
alive,
any grizzly bear
no
marks?
No scars, no marks.
Jenna was out on Nat Geographic in Yellowstone.
Yeah.
Traversing the Great West.
It was a work assignment, so
yes.
I can say.
Oh yeah, I should say that. It wasn't an extended vacation. She was on television, Nat Geographic.
It was
hanging out
time.
With grizzly bears.
I will tell you, I missed
she
you.
She was being compensated.
Yes. That's yes. The Don Draper line. Where's the thank you? That's what the money's for.
I did miss you. The only sports I talked were Eagles and Bears, and it
Jenna's been sitting on that joke for eight
long
days.
Long time. Hey, we got a big Friday show for you this morning. Last night there were
Hashtag she's sad.
But it wasn't corny. There were 12 NFL preseason games, a number of rookie debuts, but there was only one Baker. So let's start this morning with the much-hyped, much-anticipated preseason debut of number one overall pick, Baker Mayfield. Browns and Giants from MetLife last night, and those Cleveland Browns appear to have themselves a preseason quarterback controversy. Starter Tyrod Taylor was solid. Backup Baker Mayfield, also solid. Baker came in and tossed two touchdowns, going 11 of 20 for 212 yards. And Cleveland fans were oh so happy about what they saw, getting a quarterback for the first time in a very long time. CeCe, what impressed you most about Baker's debut? Saw you tweeting about it a lot last night.
Well, one thing we have to realize in trying to develop pro football players, a great debut is not typical of what happens, and especially from a quarterback, all the things that they have to be involved in. So I was impressed with a number of things. But if you start your career playing against the New York Football Giants, I played against the Giants a bunch of times, drafted by Philadelphia, just being in that stadium with that crowd in your debut, and you're used to going out there with the first unit. Oh, but you don't. Tyrod is the starter, and he starts off with a sensational, I mean, you can't start better than he started. And you have to sit there. You have to make sure you gauge your enthusiasm. You have to watch the coverages and everything. So his ability to be able to sit there as a superstar, Heisman Trophy winner, first pick in the draft, and be calm enough that he could come in and be very effective in the second, third quarter, that's the first thing. I know people won't be saying, oh, I didn't look at that way. But that's hard to do when you're a superstar player. But the way he ran the organization, you can see that the Browns and their future, it's going to be bright with Baker Mayfield. You can see why NFL franchise didn't want people to know, but this little guy can play pro football. He can throw the football. He was not a product of the system at Oklahoma. He has the arm strength. He has the type of leadership ability that people are gravitate to him. You can see him making tough throws on third down, not being able to step in, hitting the guy deep across the middle, getting rushed out of the pocket, being able to throw deep down the sideline, right, where only the wide receiver could get the football. I was very impressed at how he played quarterback. So that right there, he understood what his limitations were. When he had bad plays, he didn't allow those plays to turn into catastrophic plays. Man, the Cleveland Browns, man, you got to be happy with their overall selection after seeing him play a little less than two quarters now.
I try on a show like this, where we talk every day, very often we talk about similar subjects day to day, and I try to be consistent. Yesterday, I said I wanted to see how he was getting his team in and out of the huddle. Were there delay of games? Did they look scatterbrained? Were they getting there in time? He gets check marks in the positive column on all of that. My second question was, would he cut and run too much? Meaning, when he saw a pass rush, would he simply say, I'm going to go try to get a first down with my feet, or I'm going to try to escape outside the pocket? I was so impressed with his ability in the pass rush to keep his eyes upfield and to find guys up the field. Like what you saw, we just, in that highlight package, there's a third and seven where he has a rush right at his face. He moves laterally to the downside of your screen,
yep,
keeps his eyes upfield, stays in the pocket, hits a guy for a first down. The pass everyone will talk about today, not the touchdown to Njoku, but the one that ended up being reviewed. Now, he got outside of the pocket there, but he kept his eyes upfield instead of thinking, am I going to run? He was looking to throw, so he did cut and run a bit there, but he kept his eyes up the field to make an enormous play. Like, that really impressed me. Because we're going to talk about Lamar Jackson later in the show. I was impressed by Lamar. I thought he played well. But you also could see for him, if it gets hairy, I'm out. Like, I'm going to what I know. And I know they're different type of athletes with different strengths as far as passing the football. But even if you're trying to just nitpick, not a lot to nitpick from Baker after his preseason debut.
CeCe, you brought up patience, which is something that a lot of people watching the game last night would not have really looked for. The other thing I think I learned a lot out of you is comfort level, you know, because the game is so much faster when you're making that transition from college to the NFL. How comfortable did you feel like Baker looked in his preseason
debut? Well, I think that the Oklahoma staff that they currently have had Baker Mayfield more ready for the NFL than being a product of that system. So I think some of it is what they did at Oklahoma, absent of getting him snaps under center. But you got to give credit to the Cleveland Browns and their staff. Nick and I talked about it this morning, and Nick had picked it out. Man, their staff.
Todd Haley.
And how they facilitated. This is new. Hugh Jackson is used to calling plays, running the show. He surrendered that to Todd Haley, who's used to calling plays, and the overall prep, because Nick pointed out that not only Baker, but BP, if you get just consumed with looking at Baker, you'll forget how they played at quarterback. And their quarterback play was amazing.
How about Tyrod Taylor? I mean, he was the quarterback rating is an odd stat because a perfect score is 158.3. So, I mean, it doesn't sound like that should be the perfect score. Tyrod Taylor's quarterback rating, 158.3. That's what happens when you're 5 for 5, 20 yards per attempt because he threw for 99 yards. Well, I mean, he was – listen, I thought Tyrod was an underrated player in Buffalo, but this was as sharp as I've seen him. And he was going up against Giants starters. Like, because when you're in that first – I understand the starters didn't play long, but he was out there for the first two drives. What you saw – from Tyrod and then Baker, for the quarterbacks in the first three-plus quarters of the game to combine to go 25 of 36, the Cleveland Browns quarterbacks, like, to me, that is a testament to the job Todd Haley, Hugh Jackson, and the entire coaching staff had them ready to go for.
Judging by what you saw from Baker last night, do you feel like he closed the gap between him and between he and Tyrod Taylor?
I think we'd be rushing if we just jumped to that conclusion.
Okay.
Tyrod Taylor, first of all, is one of – there's 12 teams in the playoffs, right?
Yeah.
One of 12 quarterbacks to get his team in the playoffs. Now, of those 12 quarterbacks, if they were quarterbacking the Buffalo Bills, how much better would the Bills have been? So we got to give Tyrod a little credit for who he is and what he's going to do. And that's why the staff has been, you know, very, very emphatic about Tyrod is our starter. Baker Mayfield is the first pick in the draft. And he is a dude. And we always say this in NFL locker room, when a dude shows up, no matter what position, he's going to play. So Baker doing his part. Yes, it's ultimately, I said about 6 games before we saw this.
Yeah, does that number change at all in your head after last night?
It doesn't change at all, because I believe the Browns are going to win some games. And it's hard to put Tyrod on the bench.
If they're winning.
So yeah. They got a great situation. I believe that they improved their quarterback situation more than anyone in the NFL by trading for Tyrod and selecting Baker with that first selection.
As far as the timeline on this, I was talking with Pat Kerwin, who's a former NFL executive now in the media, yesterday, and he brought up, I thought, a really good point about who's in charge of the Browns. So it's John Dorsey. So you guys know, because I brought this up a bunch, the last first-round quarterback to not play his rookie season, it's been a decade, it was Aaron Rodgers, the GM of the team, was John Dorsey. Now, I know Favre was there, so you might say, what does that matter? The quarterback that came the closest to breaking that streak was last year in Kansas City, Patrick Mahomes. The GM then was John Dorsey. I say that to say this.
Wow.
He has a history of, if we have, and they had more than competent quarterback play with Favre, obviously, but I'm not going to rush the first round pick onto the field. I'm not going to, because I picked the guy, because the GM is the guy that makes those picks, I'm not going to make the coach make the change. So I don't think there's no chance Baker sits the whole year. I don't think he sits till week 17, but it's not going to be the rush you might see with other organizations.
And the one thing we know in 2019 for the Cleveland Browns, Dorsey will be the general manager.
Yes.
Yeah.
We don't know who will be the head coach.
All right, Baker Mayfield with a very solid first preseason game. Coming up, let's talk about someone else who made a bit of a preseason debut, Andrew Luck's first NFL game in very, 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 very long time. That's next, First Things First. Back here, First Things First. We're going to get to Andrew Luck in a second, but first, Check this out. Number two overall pick Saquon Barkley taking his first NFL touch, 39 yards, breaking three tackles in the process. See, how cool is this to watch?
Oh, this is what you're going to need to do because the Giants ain't going to block nobody. That's the most impressive thing, making people miss. Now, that's the difference between the good running backs and the great ones. There wasn't no hole there. He made a hole.
Man.
Made them think he was going outside, jump cut, sticks it inside. Oh, no, if you can do that, you can be successful with that Giants line.
Who's supposed to be blocking that right side? Oh, yeah, that's our man, Eric Flowers.
Eric Flowers.
And moving over left side, right side. Hadn't found the spot for him yet.
You can't hide a sorry ball player.
On to Ravens quarterback, rookie quarterback, former Heisman winner Lamar Jackson. He had a better showing in this, his second outing. Jukes two defenders, and he gets himself into the end zone.
I mean, this is a dynamic play. It scares me because he's not the biggest fella, but, I mean, this is what you saw him doing at Louisville.
Watch number 93 right there. Ooh, he almost tore his ACL.
Yeah, I mean, he is, like you said yesterday about Saquon, he's going to come onto the field and be the best athlete among great athletes. He's going to be the fastest guy on every field.
Talking to Ozzie Newsome, they're very pleased with his overall development his first two games in preseason.
All right, Steelers wide out. Juju Smith-Schuster absolutely mosses poor Rasul Douglas. Oh. Goes on to score a 71-yard touchdown.
I maybe call that a baby moss, like because the height of the jump. But I see what you're saying. They both went for it.
Yeah.
He went up and got it. Juju's going to be a happy man this year. Doesn't have Martavis Bryant chirping at him. He's out there. What up, C? You look a little skeptical.
That was pretty good, though, Jenna, because I thought for sure you were going to screw that up.
Because
deep down the sideline, Juju Smith-Schuster. You could have messed that up, Jenna.
But,
you know what I'm saying. But you didn't.
But I didn't.
Yeah,
that's the takeaway. I was waiting for the end of that thought.
You guys are talking over the best highlight we're going to have
Josh
all day.
Josh Allen, this was not his best highlight. Just playing himself like a rookie, poor little fella.
I mean, what's the plan, man? What are we doing? It ain't the University of Wyoming anymore.
It's a transition, Nick.
It ain't honorable mention Mountain West anymore.
He's making
Jenna,
his way
what in. Happens when the linebacker comes in?
This.
Blitzing.
This.
Remember,
it
off
makes
schedule.
You go off schedule.
Okay, so don't make the young people go off schedule.
Not yet.
Jenna Wolf hates Unless when the veterans. Oh, Josh. Josh not ready for off schedule.
No.
I'm glad he recovered after this.
He had a beautiful 70-yard bomb, though, that was only 6 yards out of bounds.
Canadian football.
Canadian League, it would have been
DeRon would have caught that one.
Yeah, absolutely. Wider fields.
Here's who else made a much-anticipated debut last night. Andrew Luck, who had last played an NFL game 585 days ago. Colts, Seahawks. Luck came in, went 6 of 9 for 64 passing yards, but most impressively and most importantly, he went home healthy. Here's what Luck had to say after the game.
For a moment there, I was like, okay, how do I approach it? Especially as leading up to the game, trying to control my emotions, and I just sort of said, screw it. I'm going to go out whatever I want to think and I want to feel, I'm going to feel it and let that happen. And it was a little bit like pressure was off of me in a sense. And I really had fun. Like, I really enjoyed it. And like I've told you guys earlier, I didn't quite know how much fun, if I would have this much fun again practicing football. I didn't know if I'd have this much fun again playing football. And it's a preseason game, I'm not going to overblow anything or blow anything out of proportion, but it's still a game, and it's still a chance to go up against another color jersey, and it was a fun step along the way.
Good perspective there from Andrew Luck.
Mm-hmm.
What was your takeaway, C, from his first game since the 2016 season?
There's only a few men that can play this game, but after watching a few snaps, if I didn't, as Nick taught me this, mm-hmm. If I'm from outer space and I drop down, never seen football before, I've been like, is there a guy in the league that's going to throw the ball better than that? Read the coverage, pre-read, drop back, and as quick as he makes decision. That's what Mel Kiper fell in love with, but not only his arm strength, but his ability to diagnose plays and get the ball out of his hand. You can see the variety of throws. He's got a gun on him. He's got a perfect throwing motion, but his ability to understand what's happening and where the ball needs to go and the placement of that, that's what Andrew Luck did last night. And, man, the football is better when you got guys like this that can play the game at such a high level, because you don't have to have great receivers. You don't have to have great personnel. Like, you can run a lot of different offenses, same way Tom Brady does. That's what you're going to see with Andrew Luck. I was happy to see him back out there and his perspective. As we saw and you pointed out with Tiger Woods all the time now, his perspective has changed. You can see that in Andrew Luck. And it was nice that he said, you know something, let's just forget all that, worrying about this. I'm just going to let it go. That speaks to, too, not only his physical health being there, but his mental health being repaired and ready to continue a great career.
My biggest takeaway was stuff that happened after the game. So I'll get to that in a second, but I just want to key on something you mentioned. Because yesterday we talked a ton about you would be watching his throwing motion to see if it looked the same. To me, to my eye, it looked just like vintage Andrew Luck. To your much more trained eye, it wasn't any more looping. It was.
Yeah, and the velocity. And the velocity that you want that Andrew, you know that he has. The variety of throws that he can make. He seemed very, very comfortable in the pocket. Didn't seem like he was rushed. Now, we're still talking about a guy between a period of 2014, 2016, got hit more, dropping straight back than any quarterback in the NFL. I didn't see that. I didn't see him rushing because I've been hit so many times that he was comfortable and comfortable enough with his arm that he wasn't rushing his throws at the top of his drop.
All right, so my two biggest takeaways didn't involve any throw he made. One was his reaction to the one legitimate hit he took. He was happy and excited. He high-fived Jack Doyle because what would an Andrew Luck game without being super and high-fived with Jack Doyle? Yeah. And like his reaction that I thought was great. It was almost like a welcome back to football moment. And he's excited. He's like, yeah, Jack. I mean, that's a play where they don't get a first down on a third and four.
And it's Bobby Wagner. Yeah. That's a real NFL play, a good reaction. And yes, you need to be able to check that box off as far as being able to
Before you move on, how important is it to take that first hit?
Well, I thought it was critically important for Luck and then critically important for the college quarterbacks because in practice, you don't let them hit the quarterbacks, I should say.
Yes.
So these guys haven't gotten a hit since their bowl game, which is, you know, unless you're Baker Mayfield, that was probably in mid-December. And so for Luck, it's been even longer.
Right.
January 1 of 2017 was the last time he actually played in a football game. But my big takeaway is what we just played at the beginning of this. His legitimate childlike exuberance. And you guys know I'm not huge on the press conferences as much as other people are sometimes. But he has made a point to vulnerably tell everyone, I didn't know if this was going to be fun.
Yes.
I didn't know if I was going to have fun playing football. He had a quote
earlier. And that's very different than saying, I don't know if I'm going to play.
Because
he's like, I'm going to play, but I don't know how much.
I don't know how much fun it's going to be. Because I would imagine it wouldn't. If he was wondering, the only reason I could imagine if I'm going to play, but I don't know how fun it's going to be, is if he had concern, am I going to be the same guy? Am I going, because that wouldn't be fun. If you were great at something, you're still in your prime, theoretically, and now you can't do it as high of a level, not only would that not be fun, it'd be demoralizing. It would be torturous. And so Luck just talking about the way he's talking, to me speaks, he thinks I'm back and healthy for the first time in a few years.
Back and healthy is one thing, but from watching it from your perspective, Were you able to see glimpses of the Andrew Luck of old, or are we still in the process of that being developed to maybe get to that?
I mean, we still might have some setbacks. If he has a two-interception game, we'll be like, wow, is it the injury? That's just part of getting back. But he hadn't played an NFL game in 500 days.
Yeah.
And going against the Seattle defense, that they're going to put pressure on you. They're going to give you a variety of looks. They're going to be one of the top 10 defenses in the league. Now he can move on. This is a pop quiz, all right? This is not a midterm exam, but you do get credit for those pop quizzes when you do. The preseason, you know what people are? The preseason is only good for people watching when people play bad, all right? When they play good, we try to act like the preseason don't matter. But the preseason is a critical part of developing professional football. That's the reason why they haven't blended those into the regular schedule. Remember the collective bargaining agreement? They tried to, we only knew two preseason games. No, there's a reason why we play four and sometimes five preseason games. They're very, very important. And the steps that Luck is making are very important also.
Great. All right, we're going to talk a lot more about Andrew Luck. But coming up next, the Cam Newton-Kelvin Benjamin beef got taken to a whole nother level. We'll show you that next on First Things First. Time for stories to start your morning. Yesterday, we learned the Patriots are adding up to $5 million in performance-based incentives to Tom Brady's deal this season. They didn't need to do that, but they're doing it anyway. Nick, what do you make of this move by New England?
Of course Brady deserves it, but my first reaction was, what was Rob Gronkowski's reaction? Like, now, he got some incentive extras last offseason, but he wants some guaranteed extras this offseason. Now, he's shown up to work. He's done what he needs to do. But I just imagine Gronk's like, hold up, they just given out money. Like, they didn't have to give Tom Brady that money. I would like that money, so I'm curious what Gronk's reaction was.
Yeah, Nick, you got to be careful and everything. That'd be just like if you go to Whitney, hey, man, I need some more money. Been like, man, we're going to give Chris some more money. I don't know if we got no change for you, little dog. Okay, porch puppy. All right, we hear you in there. But Brady, I mean.
This has been, by the way, Jenna, incentive. The theme of the week.
I mean, they should just slid this a bag puppy? Of money to
something
him.
Something like that.
I mean, they should just gave him a bag of money. Why does he need $5 million incentive to get to $19 million? How many quarterbacks are still going to be making more money than Tom Brady?
A lot.
After he's the league MVP?
A lot, but he's now $5 million closer.
Yeah, they, yeah, man, they. Porch. Don't make Tom mad, man. Okay. Keep him happy.
Okay.
Last night, the Cowboys opened up the preseason, taking on the 49ers. Ezekiel Elliott did not play. Dak Prescott did play. Dak went 3 for 3, 39 yards, including a nice 30-yard touchdown pass to rookie Michael Gallup. See, what did you take away from Dak's performance last night?
It was good to see. Dak did a great job. I was watching this game. Came on like 10 o'clock last night. So, man, we had to push it. But I want to see the Dallas Cowboys and see how they'd come out. That offensive line, you can see why they're so good. They get Zeke back in there rushing the football. But his overall decision-making was very, very good. The touchdown pass made a very good throw. Poor coverage by the cornerback there on the left side. But Dak is on the right track. It's an important season for him, throwing the football, getting it to those other young wide receivers. Trying to solidify that passing game to go with that dynamic running
you
game.
You mentioned, Nick, poor coverage by the corner. You can see it there. The safety took a terrible angle, got blinded by the sun, something, because it looked like it could have potentially been broken up. But a very good pass by Dak. And, hey, maybe this is over-optimism. I know it's for week one preseason, but Michael Gallup, we've been saying who on the Cowboys possibly could be a big play receiver. We've seen mid-round rookies all of a sudden sometimes surprise you. It's one play doesn't make a season, obviously, but Michael Gallup, the rookie out of Colorado State, a good, obviously, first impression by him when the Cowboys are looking for playmakers on the outside.
All right, moving on. I love this. Fifth-round pick Shaquem Griffin made his pro debut with the Seahawks last night. Griffin led all players with 9 tackles, including 1 for a loss. His head coach, Pete Carroll, said Shaquem was all over the field making hits. See, what'd you make of Shaq's debut last night?
I'm really thankful that Seattle drafted him because they played a type of defense where guys are a little undersized, very, very fast, pursuing to the ball. He is perfect fit for pro football as a coverage linebacker. Also, a guy can play man-to-man on tight ends and running backs. He's going to close down space when you can run a 4-3. So very happy now that we've moved off from being more of a sentimental story to, man, this dude is a football player and a good one.
And here's the best evidence that he's a football player. There were 24 teams in action last night. You know how many defensive players had more tackles than Shaq Griffin? 0. He had the most tackles of anyone that played football yesterday. That'd be great no matter who it was, considering it's a rookie. Now, playing time obviously contributes to that. Not everyone's playing as much as he played, but there was one series where he made tackles on 4 consecutive plays. Like, he wasn't having trouble wrapping up. He wasn't having trouble, like, with missed tackles. Mm-hmm. And so when you see he has a pick in camp, a couple forced fumbles, Ken Norton Jr., the D coordinator there, is speaking effusively about him. Like, this could be a really good story to go along with being a really good player.
And this is a defense that needs an influx of young talent.
And needs more speed. And he's a great athlete.
All right, finally, we've got second overall pick, Saquon Barkley, the New York Giants, on his very first professional touch against Cleveland, ripping off a 39-yard run, breaking 3 tackles, making it look easy. Nick, what did Saquon prove with his first pro carry last night?
Okay, I mean, this is going to sound hyperbolic, but I don't care. That one carry right there,
solidified.
That was, no, I'm not going to say it solidified it, but that one carry in and of itself, that was the patience of Le'Veon Bell and then the burst of Zeke. That was, I mean, L. Bell is, what makes him special is not his raw athleticism. Mm-hmm. It is his patience, his vision. Mm-hmm. He almost seems like he stops at times.
And yes.
Like, I will wait. I will. You all can keep running. I'm going to stop and look for the hole. Saquon did that because he didn't really have a hole. Like, I mean, that line was collapsed to a degree. He had to wait. And then the burst. I mean, I find my hole. Goodbye. And now they end up tracking him down. Four guys pursue him to the sideline. But this is, I mean, you can't get a better opening carry than that. It is just one carry, but it was, it'd be one thing if it was, oh, is it, you know, wide open hole, he goes through it. That's not that at all. For a lot of running backs, that's a 2-yard loss. And he made it a 39-yard gain.
The vision, the jump cut, the explosive ability. We know 4.3 speed, ability to bench press 400 and something pounds. And he has the combinations that we love to see, but his football instincts. What did I see in it? Big playability for the New York Giants, because that offensive line, they're going to miss some guys. The running backs, the good ones, all right? And the difference between them and the great ones is when there is no hole, what do they do? This is a 2-yard gain or a 0 gain at the line of scrimmage, and he makes it into 39 because of those attributes that you talk about. But the breakaway speed, if you can score from anywhere on the field, that's going to make a player special. When he's at the running back, there's only a few running backs that have that type of speed. So I'm looking forward to building on what he did. That Giants line, not only Nate Solder being added to the left tackle, but you add a star running back, it's going to make that offensive line a lot better.
And how much is that going to help Eli Manning to have the comfort of getting Odell back plus being able to have that run game?
Well, and I think an improved Evan Engram. This is a guy they spent a first-round pick on.
Last year's number one.
I think you could potentially have, and this is maybe assigning a little too much to Engram, but you could potentially have three guys that are dynamic big play guys on the field at all points in time. Because you're running back, your number one tight end, your number one wide receiver, it's not like those guys are coming off the field a lot.
Yes.
Like you, and so that can be tough for a defense to manage if you have three truly explosive players on the field at all times.
And people might be surprised by that. Nick Wright's not exaggerating in that. Engram is going to be a star, especially Eli loves the tight end being able to go down the middle. When you have that run threat, it's going to help the tight end, it's going to help the quarterback, and it's going to help the kid with the gold hair.
Yeah.
All right, good stuff there out of Saquon Barkley.
It was yellow. It is a little goldish, right?
It's a little transitioning.
Oh, here we go.
All right, moving on to the Panthers and Bills. That's the smaller story. More interesting part was right here. Fireworks between former teammates Kelvin Benjamin and Cam Newton during pregame last night. Last week, if you'll recall, Kelvin Benjamin had some spicy comments about Cam's play, saying he was inaccurate and a bad fit. That led to Cam confronting him last night. Here's what Benjamin had to say about the incident after the game.
I mean, I was just moving on from it, I guess.
What did he say to you?
Cam. I mean, not serious, really.
What did you say to him?
Moving on from it.
It looked like you tried to walk away from him a few times.
Huh?
It looked like you tried to walk away from him a few times.
Yeah, just moving on from
it. You didn't want to get into it.
Yeah.
What was he trying to say to you?
I don't even know. I wasn't even trying to listen.
So we got a lot out of that interview there.
Yeah.
We really now know exactly what happened, said nobody ever. Nick, what did you make of this?
Did you want to see? You look like you were about to say something, see, if you wanted to.
No.
Okay,
I'll
wait. All right. I mean, what I make of what I saw there and on the field and in the interview is Kelvin Benjamin has no interest whatsoever in standing by what he said. He has no interest whatsoever in, I would say, owning up to the repercussions of nobody asked you to go out of your way to slam Cam Newton. Nobody asked you to go out of your way and say I would have been better with any other quarterback in football. You did that. And I want to break down, like, really what we're seeing here. People should know the guy in the white is Thomas Davis. That's been a teammate of both of theirs for a long time. So Cam sees Kelvin Benjamin.
Former NFL man of the year.
A great man.
Great dude.
And so he sees Kelvin Benjamin already talking with Thomas Davis, and it looks like a Panthers equipment guy, staffer, whatever it is. Now, Cam walks up on him, and Cam is a big guy, and he does get all up in Kelvin's personal space. And I would imagine it was because it looked like, if you look at the look on Cam's face in the beginning, it's something like, what were you saying? And then he flashes that $10 million smile and throws his hand up for some dap. And where it gets serious is when the camera pans here and you see Cam's hand is now extended in front. And he looks at his hand, sees Benjamin will not even shake his hand. That's when he says to Thomas Davis, no, we got to talk. And Cam puts his hands behind his back. So we're not going to get any confrontation here. But you won't even shake my hand? Wait, you won't even shake my hand?
Yeah, but why are you in my face, though?
Because you were talking wild about me to the media. Like, is that really how you feel? You feel I was the worst thing that ever happened
to you. Man, you better not be coming up in my face. You come all the way across the field. Like, there was a lot of different things Cam could do. Now, Cam is in the right here. But you don't get in anyone's personal space. All right?
He got a little closer.
He touched him. Mm-hmm. He touched him with his body. If someone on the street did this to you, you would feel uncomfortable.
Yes. If someone on the street, you feel a little different if it's someone you know and have a relationship with.
Well, this is the facts right here. All right? Kelvin Benjamin, after making the statement, he's already been reprimanded by the team. The general manager and the head coach got on him for bringing unnecessary attention before this preseason game. Because the thing about it was, he was getting ready. They were playing Carolina. So that led to the comments about Cam Newton. So he's already been reprimanded. There's not a lot that he can do. Obviously, because his soundbite from the interview, he said that I'm moving on. That was his only response, because basically the team has told him,
right,
we want you.
We're moving on.
We're moving on from this. Now, Kelvin Benjamin, to me, he talked about Cam as far as what Cam knew as far as football. Him explaining himself, he didn't do a good job of that. Cam was not right in coming across the field and invading his personal space. Bad things can happen. I've tried to tell you how NFL locker rooms work. We saw with OBJ how it escalated from on the field in warmups till in the game, where they end up being fighting on the field. So, Kelvin Benjamin, you can have whatever opinion you want about what he said about Cam. But when Cam, who is one of the 32 starting quarterbacks in this league, he is a former MVP, when you walk across the field, invade another person's personal space, all right? Cam was not right in doing that.
Okay.
Now, talking to him, addressing, but you do not make body contact with another human being. All right? You wouldn't do it in an office. You wouldn't do it out on the street. So why are you doing that to me?
The reason that I would say, why are you doing that to me? Because it's not, as you say all the time, it's not a regular office, and it's not out on the street. And
I've been in that office. Don't touch me.
Okay, that's fine. But
so it's not like we're guessing on that.
Absolutely. But even having been in that offense, or that office, pardon me, in any walk of life, there is few things you can do more disrespectful than someone trying to shake your hand and you will not shake their hand. That is something you do to someone you have so little regard for and so much disgust for. I see people, I don't want to say on a regular basis, but somewhat often, that I, like, either because of who they are professionally or who they are personally, I'm not big fans of theirs. But if they try to shake my hand, I'm not going to walk by them. I'm not going to keep my hand back.
I think this is a little bit different. I think this is far more explosive. The words that he said about Cam, when you are a black quarterback, that's the last thing you want to hear is you don't know football like some other guys know, who most of them are white.
Of course.
Okay.
Which is why I understand why Cam would want to go talk to him about it.
Talk to the equipment people. We meet the other players on the team all the time. We know where their buses are coming in. You do not have to do it on the field. We exchange autograph. We exchange numbers. A lot of times, it's not on the field. If I want to get him and get his attention and talk to him, there's other ways to do it.
Especially with cameras everywhere.
But Cam didn't know that it was going to go like this. Cam is smiling, trying to shake his hand.
You know what? What Cam knew? If he would have stayed on that side of the field, he would have known exactly how it would have gone.
Of course. But I don't blame Cam for wanting to address. We want to find out, hey, man. Like,
yeah, but there's other ways to address it.
But can't I make the argument that with Thomas Davis there, who we both talked about who he is, that is actually a better time than when you're both away from everything if it does get explosive. Like, Thomas Davis is there. He walks over. I agree he shouldn't have bumped him. But if
he told Thomas Davis to leave. Once, so your security blanket, he told him, shoe fly.
Right, because...
Shoe fly, I got this.
Because once he
would... Thomas Davis is the senior guy.
Yes. But he didn't tell him shoo until he saw this guy won't even shake my hand. Okay, we're going to
When Cam realized he wasn't going to shake his hand, Cam should have walked away, because nothing good could come after that. If it's so disrespectful, not getting you, Cam should have analyzed that. Then okay, what good could come after that?
And he eventually does, about 40 seconds later. We just saw it there, and he finally waves him off. He's like, all right, forget it.
And this is my whole problem with the situation. I think that you don't realize. I just hold Cam to a higher standard than I hold Kelvin Benjamin to. Kelvin Benjamin, he had already messed up. and the organization, who is cutting his check, that's the most important thing right there. It's not how that football player feels about me. It's how does my general manager and how does my head coach feel about me when I leave this field?
So let me ask you this, because you're a guy that people held, even though you weren't a quarterback, they held Chris Carter to a different standard than they'd hold other people. At what point do you stop being Chris Carter the idea, the brand, and become Chris Carter the man, where I cannot
it's not going to be somebody saying, ha, he doesn't know football. You know the reason why? Because I know more football than that guy. And every time I go out there, I prove it to be true.
Absolutely.
I'm beyond all that, man. I'm not going to lose my job or my status in life by confronting a guy in the NFL that I know. Man, you could get sucker punched walking up on NFL guys like that. That I know and that I respect. I respect his personal space, even though he might have said that about me. I'm bigger than that, man.
I just feel like
I hold one of the most precious trophies that's ever been given out in that league. You know what that is? That's the most valuable player. In this season, who was the baddest dude ever? And in that season, I could read the coverage, and you wasn't there, and I benefited the most with you being on the bench. I'm bigger than that. I'm bigger than that. And that's what I expect from Cam Newton.
Well, that is the last time I'm going to chest bump Nick when I say hello in
just,
the morning.
Just shake my hand.
No, I thought the hand, chest bump was working for us. Hand. Now I feel like it's not.
I walk past people every day, and they know they ain't getting no handshake.
Well, that's...
You know that.
Yes,
coming
you know
up.
That. Well, you know.
No.
That's people... Hey, Chris Carter.
Dez. Ryan actually warming up to the Browns. That's see. Next on First Things First. We are back here in First Things First with Super Bowl champ Chris Canty, and CeCe's getting all up
there
in his
go,
face.
There you go, CeCe. You want the Browns down?
All up in his face.
Don't nobody want to hit me with the Cam.
The difference between this and that is Cam's got a little bit of size on Kelvin Benjamin. Ain't nobody got a little bit of size on Chris Canty.
That's a good point.
Man, why do you think I shake your hand so often? Just in case I don't miss one.
Just to keep everything cool, right? Just to keep everything cool. This is where we're at.
He needs some security up in the Red Rooster tonight.
Just a little bit.
All right.
Come on now.
Chris Canty, let's talk some Dez Bryant, who, with the preseason now underway, remains unsigned. Yesterday, reports surfaced that Dez was not returning calls from the Browns about coming in to try out for their team. But Dez did hop on Twitter because it seemed more efficient, apparently, than just answering his phone. And he tweeted, quote, starting my visits next week, I'm coming to the land to see you, Mr. Dorsey. All right, Chris Canty, would Dez be a good fit in Cleveland? Let's start there.
General, the more and more I think about it, the more I'm coming around on the idea that Dez Bryant might be a fit for the Cleveland Browns. And I say that based on what I saw last night in the preseason game. From a football standpoint, some of the concepts that Hugh Jackson and Todd Haley want to involve in the offense, the back shoulders to Rashard Higgins, the slant route to Antonio Callaway, those are pass routes, concepts that Dez Bryant can do in his sleep. And so when you start to think about the element of having a big body receiver outside of the numbers, they don't have that guy on their roster personnel-wise. They just don't. They don't have big receivers. Jarvis Landry is not a big guy. What they're trying to do with Antonio Callaway, he's not a big guy. He's 5'11". They need somebody that's a big body target outside of the numbers for their quarterbacks. Tyrod Taylor, Baker Mayfield, they're not big guys in stature, so sometimes you're going to have to be able to put some touch on the ball, loft it outside of the numbers. Dez Bryant is the guy that can go up and make the play on those 50-50 balls. So from a football perspective, makes a lot of sense. The other thing that I like about Dez Bryant going to Cleveland is even though he's temperamental and you worry about him being a negative influence on the quarterback, Dez Bryant has always been a top competitor. And that's the one thing that Hugh Jackson and John Dorsey are trying to do with that culture in the Cleveland Browns organization. They want guys that love to compete. And Dez Bryant loves to compete. So I like that element of having him with that organization.
You were mentioning some of the things Dez tweeted yesterday. What I read on Twitter is the only reason that I wouldn't want him on the team. And the only reason it has nothing to do. All your football points are A-plus as always. And you're right. Like what you saw the offense they're running with what Todd Haley's done with somewhat mercurial wide receivers, all these things. But, man, I read a John Dorsey quote yesterday saying, we'd love to have Dez in if he'd answer the phone. I can't get him on the phone. Dez then, somebody basically relayed that to him via Twitter, an NFL reporter. Dez said, you're lying. And then about 2 hours later said, scheduled to go to Cleveland, while he's live tweeting that game. Then he also was tweeting about...
There's a tweet in between, which I was also alarming, that I'm going to visit teams when I'm right.
When I'm right, I've played with a broken foot. I wanted to take this offseason, spend time with my family, and get my body right, which... in and of themselves are all fine, but as a in its totality, and when, even with the Browns, he's like, I wouldn't mind playing for Cleveland. Like, this is, again, you got to recognize where you are in life, have CeCe's favorite phrase, self-awareness, and it's not about, this ain't Baskin-Robbins for you anymore. You don't have 31 flavors. You might be down to a couple. Like, vanilla's considering you, and chocolate might make a phone call. Like, right. And so I just, that concerned me. Like, I scrolled through his whole timeline yesterday, and that concerned me, and Dorsey saying, I can't get him on the phone. Like, what you doing, man?
When I look at Dez's career, and I'm pulling for Dez to be able to get on a team and to be able to show his skills. After this weekend, seeing one of my former teammates inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame, it took me back to remember. I remember about halfway through Randy's career, people had given up on him. He before that, he had gone to Oakland. Before he had gone to New England, he had gone to Oakland. Two bad years. Randy Moss is done. He's washed up. Terrell Owens, Hall of Fame this weekend. Early in his career, had some success. Then people midway gave up on him. And then he was able to come back a couple more times after that. Dez Bryant, if he was able to fall in love with working out, because as you can see, T.O., after inducted, wherever he did it in Tennessee, he worked out for Saskatchewan of the CFL
the next day
on Sunday for the head coach and general manager there. Randy Moss, I saw him this past weekend. He could still run a go route. He's in great shape. They're phenomenal athletes, but they both were in love with working out. I would challenge Dez Bryant. Man, I would go to Cleveland. They got a good quarterback situation. The wide receiver coach is very, very good. And Todd Haley and the job that him and Hugh are doing, that's where I would chance my next career move if I was Dez. I would go to Cleveland. I wouldn't be thinking about all the other stuff. He needs a fresh start, a lot like these guys did. Now, the difference is, these guys are workout phenoms now. Mm-hmm. They love to run and take care of their body. And now, if Dez said he was having some injury issues, that his body was bothering him a little bit, that was hindering his training, I just use those two examples because I still believe that it's possible. But it is go time right now, all right? You can't afford to miss the whole preseason and expect to be able to take up where you left off 2015. It wasn't like you had a great season last year. Yeah, right. So I would give the Cleveland Browns a chance because I believe in what they're doing, and they have arm talent to be able to get the football to multiple weapons.
And, CeCe, you're hitting the nail on the head when you're talking about the concerns with Dez Bryant, because when you start to decline with overall athleticism as you get older, you have to make sure that you work out harder. And
yes,
the fact that Dez Bryant is saying, I'm not going to go into training camp and join a team until I'm ready, to me that implies that he hasn't been necessarily taking this time away from the game to make sure that his body is in top condition and focusing on all the little things that he needs to improve on so that he can go into training camp as well conditioned as possible and getting ready to play football in the regular season. Because a lot of guys think that they're in good shape until they get to football camp, to get their training camp, and then they realize they're not in football shape. So with Dez Bryant, that's the one thing I worry about, because it doesn't get easier as you get older to get in shape.
Either that or while he was training, because he was released a long time ago, he injured himself. Now, that's the only thing. I'm willing to throw Dez an olive branch. Either he injured himself or it's the situation that Canty points out.
Because he wasn't injured when the Cowboys cut him. Like,
injured to the effect that
they'd fail him on the physical.
Absolutely. There you go.
It's a different distinction. You got to take an entrance physical and an exit physical. And so, like, he was not injured to the point to where he had any, released failed physical, anything like that. So that doesn't mean he didn't get dinged this offseason. And maybe he just means I needed rest and recuperation from 8 years in the NFL. But he also said, I got 3 years left. Like, that's an odd thing to put out there.
Mm-hmm.
It's an odd thing for a guy in this era at that position whose peak was, I understand his peak was 3 years ago, but his peak was as high as it was, to say, oh, yeah, I got 3 years left. Like, why are you putting out there you think you only got three more years of football when you're not on a team right now? Mm-hmm. That doesn't make sense to me either.
My red flag was what you both mentioned. If you're looking for a place to land, the last thing you want to do is have question marks surrounding you, which is either if it's injury or if you're not right or if you're not ready to play or if you're not in shape. If barring an injury, get yourself in shape unless you are injured so that when the call does come in, you're on borrowed time now. You have a couple more weeks until things really get moving. You're into the preseason.
And you got to learn the system.
And you got to learn the system. But thinking about where Dez Bryant is, he's going to have to take a one-year deal. Hopefully he'll be motivated, he'll have something to prove, and that will be the difference in terms of him being able to get things back on track and him be that productive receiver that we've seen in the past.
All right, let me ask you both a question, though, about what John Dorsey said, because I'm not trying to harp on it, but I think it's meaningful. I understand everyone at this table has an agent. Like, every pro athlete essentially has an agent. The agent negotiates contracts. This guy calls you, call my agent to discuss it. I get that. But what do you make of a guy not answering a call from the GM, even if it's a brief conversation, even if it's a get-to-know-you conversation? Like, if someone
any team or network, no, call Chris Carter first. Don't call his agent because the agent worked for me.
Right.
All right? I make everything happen. I don't know how Dez is running this business, but everything should be going through him.
Right.
I don't
know. At least the introductory conversation.
One.
Like the conversation of, hey, we want to bring you in, even if it's as much as, okay, it's great talking to you. Nice
I know
to
what
you.
John Dorsey
agent.
Wouldn't do. He wouldn't put the message out there that he had not communicated with Dez Bryant and Dez wouldn't get back to him if that hadn't happened.
Right, it would be a bizarre thing to lie about.
Yeah, John Dorsey's a stand-up guy. So the fact that this is out there, that actually happened, it's a head-scratcher, no doubt, about Dez Bryant not picking up the phone.
It is. For a guy desperate to land on a team, to take it for granted that you have a general manager that.
And by the way, he also tweeted, my visits start next week. So
he
maybe he's got
a whole bunch
lined up.
Bunch of teams
and
like
he's just been keeping it from us. I don't know. We'll
All right. Chris Candy, stick around. Coming up, did Baker Mayfield take his first step towards winning the starting job out in Cleveland? That's next. This is First Things First. Back here on First Things First with Chris Canty. Let's get back to last night's action. Number one overall draft pick, Baker Mayfield's NFL debut. Baker went 11 for 20 for 212 passing yards and two touchdowns in two quarters of play against the New York Giants. Chris Canty, what did you make of Baker's performance last night?
I don't think it was anything short of outstanding. I mean, when you looked at what Baker Mayfield did and just his understanding of the offense and what Todd Haley wants to do, and then his poise to be able to execute, especially in situational football, right? So he had led two scoring drives on the six possessions that he was actually in the game. Mm-hmm. That first scoring drive, 14 plays, 72 yards. You look at the third and 18, they ran a TT stunt up front. Guy came free.
Yes.
Baker didn't step out. He stepped up. He was able to drive the ball down the field on that deep dig. They converted on that play. Ultimately got him down into the red zone. He had a scramble on third down and extended the drive. He had to scramble on fourth down, extended the drive. Then the touchdown pass to David Njoku, right? The defensive back on the tight end's back, and then the linebacker with his back turned. Baker put the football only where his guy can get it. And those things, when you start looking at those intangibles and having a feel on being able to do that this early in his NFL career, I think those are things that translate into having success as a starting quarterback sooner rather than later. So I was impressed by it.
The thing that I like is not one gimmick. I'm talking about all pro football, either formations. It wasn't something that they had either tricked up.
Like didn't look like Oklahoma.
No, but I give Oklahoma and their coach there to develop his skill set, because typically coming out of that Big 12, those offenses, the quarterbacks put up tremendous numbers, but it doesn't transfer over. I saw last night a guy that it would take a month worth of video of a rookie quarterback to get all the types of throws that he did. The touchdown pass, over the zone coverage, into two guys converting in the back, throwing it between three guys.
Yep.
All right? Where it's the back of the end zone. So where are you missing the back of the end zone? You either miss real, real low or you miss high. That's a rookie quarterback who knows that. The third down, the TT stunt, flushes him out where he's able to come up where they wanted him to flush out. No, on the third down conversion, getting out, protecting himself on the sideline, not being cavalier where the guy tried to take a little shot at his knee. bailing out of the pocket to the right, the deep throw down the sideline where only his wide receiver can catch it, had to go to review to be overturned. The variety for which of things he did, that's why you come to the conclusion, Canty, man, this was a great performance by a rookie on the biggest of stages. And I keep telling the preseason football, you know when it's only time it counts? When you play bad. Then it's like, oh, man, he played terrible. We try to act as if
we minimize it when guys play well. It's a totally fair critique of us in the media that when guys play poorly, it's the end of the world. When guys play well, that's the preseason.
The preseason is not NBA Summer League and is not NBA preseason games because of the physicality of it. So we have to give him the proper credit.
I knew he could make the throws. So I wasn't, that's not the part that I'm going to key on. It was good to see him make the throws, but you don't set the all-time passer rating record in consecutive seasons if you can't make basically every throw. I wanted to see how he dealt with the rush. Mm-hmm. If he went to, oh, there's a rush, let me get out of the pocket. There's a rush, let me put my head down. And the play that most impressed me is the one you keyed on, the 3rd and 18. Not because he converted it, but because he gave himself the opportunity to convert it.
Yes.
The 3rd and 7 when he rushes to the outside and keeps his eyes up the field, that's a great play. But the 3rd and 18 where he steps right into it.
Mm-hmm.
And you can tell by the way they're running that defense is, and tell me if I'm getting over my skis here, but they know that the defense knows where the sticks are, but they also think that by the time, if he scrambles, by the time the receiver comes across, we'll be there. The only way you can make that throw is if you don't scramble outside, you step up and you get to the weak spot of the zone. That's a veteran play. It's a veteran play. People say one of the best things about Tom Brady, I've heard one of his coaches say this, is his mobility. Mm. And people are like, the hell are you talking about? He has like 4 rushing yards a season. It's his mobility in the pocket, stepping up, mm-hmm. stepping to the side. And you saw some of that from Baker yesterday. I didn't anticipate that. I thought when he got rushed, he would try to escape, and instead he did. I thought he was great in that regard.
What about the two things that you really can't learn, which is patience and comfort? He seemed to have both of those things out there, which, as CeCe says all the time, is just so rare for a young guy coming out of college and just learning the game to look like he wants to be there, he belongs there, like the game is slow enough for him to really master.
No, you're right, Jenna. He was poised, and he did have control of the huddle. And Nick, that was one of the things we talked about yesterday, just being able to operate the offense.
Get it in and out
of the huddle. You know, making sure you avoid the delay of games, the pre-snap penalties, making sure that the cadence, the checks at the line of scrimmage, all of that stuff was clean. And that's exactly what you saw last night from Baker. In the 6 possessions that he was in there, that was a productive offense. And you see he was able to put together those 2 scoring drives. And CC, one of the throws that we didn't talk about was the slant to Antonio Callaway. He put it in front of the receiver and down where he could make a play. And you know when you're throwing the ball in the middle of the football field, that has to be down. Otherwise, you run the risk of getting it tipped.
I love the fact that you bring that up, because in that, they were in tight man-to-man coverage, and the quarterback is taught either to hit the wide receiver either out of the break, because the inside coverage, either a linebacker or a safety, is going to be taking that flat receiver. And if you don't hit him right out of the break, there's a chance for an interception. He didn't hit him out of the break. He waited until he got in the second hole. And, man, he fired, and I said on the end zone shot, you miss a guy in the end zone, either low or high. If you miss a guy in 3rd down, you miss him low on a slant, and that's where he missed him, which led to the touchdown. So,
and do you think he missed him, or was he leading him?
I thought he was leading him a little bit.
Well, when I say miss, I always talk about like golf shots, like where do I want to miss it? I'm not going to miss it behind him. I'm going to miss it low and in front of him, even though it was targeted on.
Because
when I say that.
I got you. You mean it wasn't a perfect.
You see that? You see the DB?
I see exactly what you, yep.
But that's, when I saw that, I thought of a quote from you that I never forget and changed the way I watch how quarterbacks throw and evaluate quarterbacks. Does the ball speak to you? Like, that was, you said when you're playing with a good quarterback, where he places the ball, he's
excuse
telling
me, I don't
you,
make that sound too awful.
No, but he's telling you, you got to
green grass in front of
you. Green grass in front of
you. And I got a man in bump and run, so I know if he undercuts me, they got 1 high safety. He's throwing it in front of me. He's letting me know where I'm supposed to go next.
I do want to ask you, Chris, about Tyrod Taylor, who he himself had a great game last night. It's not mm-hmm. like the light bulb went off, it's going to be Baker. I mean, there's a bit of a controversy situation in Cleveland. Both guys went out and had solid performances last night.
I don't think it's a controversy. I think Tyrod is their starting quarterback, and Hugh Jackson has been clear about that. And the Cleveland Browns can't afford to mess up and make a mistake on another first-round pick at the quarterback position. So they're going to give Baker as much time as he needs. So when he goes under center as the starting quarterback in the regular season, that he is as prepared as he possibly can. Because once you go to Baker Mayfield, if he struggles, you can't go back to Tyrod Taylor. So they're going to allow Tyrod to start out the season. And I think right now, Tyrod gives them the best chance to win. And nobody knows that more than the other 52 guys on that team.
Yeah, I haven't heard a better example of why Baker Mayfield's going to play than Nick told me. So I want Nick changed my thought because I thought Halloween, here comes Baker Mayfield.
What CeCe's talking about is why it might be longer than people expect. Is like, so the last rookie quarterback to not play, first round pick, was Aaron Rodgers. It's been a decade, not play at all his rookie year. The GM there was John Dorsey. The quarterback that came the closest to breaking that streak was Pat Mahomes last year, didn't play until week 17. The GM was John Dorsey. The GM and the guy that selected Baker Mayfield is John Dorsey. He has shown a propensity. He will be patient. He will not force the head coach to go with.
And he also traded.
Right.
For Tyrod.
He traded for Tyrod.
Yes.
And he will not force the head coach, and he knows as well as anybody that while John Dorsey's got a lot of job security, Hugh Jackson does not. Like, the wins are important. And right now, as great as Baker was yesterday, right now Tyrod's the better player.
Yep.
And I also think in Cleveland, we have to recognize when we evaluate both these guys, but Tyrod, because we've seen him as a pro before, how much better is Tyrod going to be with what I believe to be the best offensive coordinator he's ever had? I think Todd Haley, you can't look at these two quarterbacks combined to go 25 of 36. And just like...
Man, with, good point there.
Just like we only talk about preseason mattering when guys play poorly, we typically only talk about coaching mattering when coaches stink or when they screw something up. Todd Haley has raised the tide of the offense everywhere he's been. And Steelers have all that talent. They were better with Todd than without Todd. Like, Todd Haley...
he added on to what Bruce Arians was already doing and being successful.
And so I think Todd Haley is going to, we're going to see the best of Tyrod Taylor however long he gets to be the quarterback, which might be longer than most people expect.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.